We begin now with the story that has dominated the national conversation. Trayvon Martin's death and its puzzling aftermath has swept even the presidential election from center stage. It's almost as though the Martin case amounts to a deadly, real national referendum on what constitutes peace and security, individual rights and racial oppression, acting out of hate or acting out of bounds in the United States. Because Trayvon Martin is dead, an unarmed 17-year-old, we are denied a viewpoint of this incident, even as his family and his community, much more tragically, are denied their friend and loved one. We begin this morning with the legal landscape on which this horrible drama was played out. Ben Montgomery is a staff writer with the Tampa Bay Times. He's extensively investigated the so-called Stand Your Ground law, on which the behavior of the alleged shooter, George Zimmerman, was explained, and on the basis of which the delay in prosecuting this case was also explained. Ben, what is the Stand Your Ground law, and how does it restrict prosecutors and law enforcement and encourage the behavior that now has erupted across America in a conversation that is still continuing?
Well, the Stand Your Ground law, which was passed by the Florida legislature in 2005 and signed into law by Jeb Bush, basically expands the old law, which is commonly referred to as the Castle Doctrine. The old law gave you the right to protect yourself with deadly force inside your home. The new law expands that outside your home, essentially. You only need to reasonably believe that pulling the trigger or plunging the knife or swinging the bat against a perpetrator is necessary to stop the other person from hurting you.
And how does this have an impact on neighborhood watch groups and people who are actually actively patrolling neighborhoods like the one in question here?
Well, under the old doctrine, one would be expected to reasonably and safely retreat from a situation in which he or she was confronted. In the new law, if one feels or reasonably believes that he or she is under threat of harm from someone else, no matter where, in a park, in a neighborhood, in a clubhouse, he or she doesn't have to retreat. You can use deadly force to prevent someone from hurting you if you feel threatened.
Ben Montgomery, why would this case not have been investigated or prosecuted in the community in Florida where it took place?
Well, that remains to be seen. There are chances that this case, and it certainly looks like with the national attention on it, this case may go forward and may be presented to a grand jury. That's not always the case. There have been a number of instances in which two people meet on a dark road. One of them winds up dead, and another claims that the person attacked him, and he felt it was in his best interest to use deadly force against the person. This is the problem this law creates, according to many of the prosecutors and law enforcement officers who have opposed it from the beginning.
And it restricts them from taking action, and it seems that that was at least part of the motivation here. Ben Montgomery is a staff writer at the Tampa Bay Times. And, of course, there, in the wake of all of the national and international outcry over this case, there is a federal investigation. And yesterday, the Florida State Attorney's Office announced a grand jury will now hear evidence in the case. Valerie Houston is a pastor at Allen Chapel AME Church in Sanford, Florida. Last night, she hosted a community meeting led by the NAACP. Valerie, the community is now left with trying to deal with the aftermath here. Did you find any common ground last night at your town meeting?
I believe the common ground was that there's not going to be any unrest until there is an arrest, because all of those incidents point to that it is not self-defense.
Now, it's my understanding that the mayor of Sanford and the chief of police, local residents, and obviously key players here were supposed to be at this town meeting. Did they show?
They did not show because the chief of police was advised not to attend. The city manager and the mayor was summoned to a meeting in Washington, D.C. with Corrine Brown.
And here is a case where a law that is supposed to protect individuals in a community like Sanford has now killed a teenager, has resulted in the death of a teenager, and divided a community. What do you make of that, Valerie Houston?
Well, I make of that is because the law does not protect the innocent young man, 17-year-old Trayvon, because in this case, this was a pursue and confront. The young man was going about his business, going back to his father, and the Zimmerman gets out of his truck, and he is told by the dispatcher, do not follow the young man, and he did.
So, and you're referring to the 911 call where the police individual advised this Zimmerman watch volunteer to get back in his car and not pursue. He violated that, but still there was no investigation. How outraged is your community, Valerie?
Very outraged. There was a massive crowd outside of about 400, and there was 375 inside because we had to hold to capacity of the building.
We're talking with Valerie Houston, who's a pastor at the Allen Chapel AME Church in Sanford, Florida. Let's bring in Farai Chidea, a journalist, of course, friend of The Takeaway, blogger at Farai.com. Farai, what's your reaction to all of this? We're going to keep both of you into the next segment, but give us a sort of an initial thought from you.
Well, I think that there's a couple of things here. First of all, what happened to Trayvon Martin, I think, is a clear miscarriage of justice on a large scale. However, it may also be legal, as we've been hearing. And there's a difference between what's moral and what's legal. As many people have pointed out, what happened in Nazi Germany was legal. I mean, it depends on what the laws say. And this law was also lobbied for by the NRA. It was one that was pursued as a political agenda. And what we're seeing is some of the complications that come with that.
Suggestion from Farai Chidea that this constitutes, in a sense, a legal lynching in the 21st century on some level. Obviously, that raises an enormous number of provocative issues. Valerie Houston, do you think this is completely racial in scope or a matter of the police not doing their job?
I think it's more of a power from Zimmerman because he desires to be a police officer and he took matters in his hand. And I believe the police officers did not do what they should have done to make sure they arrest him. They didn't do a drug test. They just took his word. It was self-defense. They didn't investigate.
And he's still at large. Valerie Houston, pastor at Allen Chapel AME Church in Sanford, Florida, for Farai Chidea, also with us. We're going to leave you now with a moment at that town meeting last night that Valerie Houston led, where the chief of police actually was the subject of discussion.
If he is not fired by 26 March, we will boycott the police department. We will shut it down.
Continuing now with our discussion of the Sanford, Florida case of Trayvon Martin, who was killed by alleged shooter George Zimmerman in an incident that has now captivated the nation and certainly dominated the discussion in the headlines, even in the midst of a presidential campaign. Valerie Houston, still with us, pastor at Allen Chapel Church in Sanford, Florida. She hosted a community meeting with the NAACP. The mayor of Sanford and the Sanford chief of police were supposed to be there. They were no-shows. Valerie, talk about the conversations you've had in your community. When these laws, this 2005 or so law, this Stand Your Ground law was passed, did people in your community have a sense of alarm and outrage that it might mean this sort of thing would happen?
No, because I think at the time, just like everybody else, they thought it would be something to protect themselves. And so it has had a reverse effect, and so now it's aware of the magnitude of what was voted upon. I'm sure there was some discussion, but not to the magnitude, because now this 17-year-old young man has lost his life.
What have you heard from outside the community that's either alarmed you or has been support that you embrace?
Just support. This transcends religion and races and just people from all over, even TV commentaries, agreeing that it's a case that has a lot of unanswered questions, and that's why we're here and having all the rallies and the marches to make sure that we're heard and we're a voice for Trayvon because he can't speak for himself.
So Valerie Houston, Farai Chidea, also with us, journalist and blogger at Farai.com. What does this mean? You sort of set it up at the beginning of our discussion that this is a legal issue. This is behavior that the law, at least on paper, seems to endorse on some level. What does that mean for the notion of justice in the United States right now?
Well, I would just follow up on the comments of the minister that this is something that transcends race. I mean, you did attribute to me that it was a legal lynching. I actually never said that. I didn't even mention race in the first set of comments, because I believe this is really much more about, there are racial implications, don't get me wrong, but I think this is about a legal policy that is designed to reinforce people's existing behaviors about crime. People tend to believe that crime is much more prevalent in America than it is. People also believe that African Americans are more likely to kill white Americans than they actually are. And there's all sorts of studies that show that people have persistent beliefs on issues like gun ownership, and that they seek out information that confirms their existing beliefs. So I want to make it clear that, you know, if you look at the case that's also going on right now of Trevor Dooley, he's an African American man who, under the same law, he's been called up on manslaughter charges, but under the same law may be let go for killing a white man. So this is a very complicated issue that there's one issue of the devaluation of young black men's lives, which is absolutely the case. But there's also a broader legal implication that crosses racial lines.
No, absolutely. And indeed, the only mention of lynching that I thought was relevant here was that people who did lynching in the early part of the 20th century thought that they were doing something legal in many, many places in the United States. But you're right. There's no explicit racial issue here, except that the law permits people, as you've sort of suggested here, to act out roles they wouldn't otherwise play. And then you put a gun in the mix and you get dead people.
Yes. And I do think that race plays into it, because there are persistent stereotypes about young black men and about black men in general that if you go to my blog, you'll see links to several studies. I won't bore everyone with what seems obvious, which is that there is bias against African Americans that's documented, that goes far beyond any other factors, you know, that even the courts have called up as existing bias against African Americans in the criminal justice system, in education. But I think here what we really have to look at is the legal implication of making law based on lobbying policy. Again, the NRA was involved in lobbying for this law, and also without proper community involvement at the beginning of the lawmaking process to really do a discovery of what this means for a community.
And of course, Valerie Houston is left to, in part, and many communities around the United States, to mop up the community work that wasn't done in the passage of this law in the aftermath of this terrible shooting. Valerie Houston, what's your advice to parishioners, to members of your community, to the world at large that's listening to your every word this week?
My advice would be to continue to pray for justice. We also want to make sure that we keep this as a nonviolent movement. We want to make sure that justice is served. And one of the things we are praying for is a grand jury that's supposed to have a decision on April the 10th, that their hearts will be touched and realize this is something that Zimmerman needs to be charged and that he needs to be arrested, and so we can have a thorough investigation of the incident.
Would you recommend an elimination of neighborhood watch groups, a change in the law of neighborhood watch groups, or some regulation?
Some regulations, and it was voiced that he did violate the regulations, because you're not supposed to carry a firearm, and he was armed. That was stated on the news.
And, of course, the Second Amendment permits all kinds of people to be armed. So, in a sense, there's a Second Amendment that could put a gun into almost any of these situations here. Valerie Houston, what would you say to George Zimmerman if he was in your church or came to your town meeting?
Oh, I would say to him, number one, that he took a life of an innocent young man who was going about his business, wasn't doing anything to disturb him. And I feel like it was a power to show that he had the power to carry a, because he said racial slurs. He had already called 42 times, and I would say to him that what he did was unjust, and we are will not stop until justice prevails.
Valerie Houston, a pastor at Allen Chapel Church in Sanford, Florida. She hosted a community meeting with the NAACP last night. Farai Chidea, also with us, journalist and blogger at Farai.com. Keep the conversation going. We'll leave you again with a few moments from that town meeting in Sanford, Florida last night.
This is just the beginning of what has taken place. there's a whole lot more to come. We're going to need your support, your diligence, in every step of the way to make sure that justice in this case prevails.